Right now it is time for the Media Beat with David Tarachuk. David, of course, joins us every Friday morning, sometimes a little earlier, sometimes a little later. He's got his own website, themediabeat.us, of course. You can find him on Huffington Post. He's also a PBS television correspondent reporting on ethics and belief. Good morning, David.
Well, hello. It's good to be back with you.
Well, we've missed you. Miss you every day you're not here.
Yeah, I miss not talking to you every day.
How are you feeling?
I'm feeling perfectly fine.
All right, your cold is gone?
On the whole. We could start to dig into that. I could find things to complain about. There was a wonderful cartoon I used to see when I visited a friend. It's two men meeting each other on the street, and one says, "Well, how are you?" And the other says, "Well, I can't complain, but I do, but I do."
The reason that we've asked you here today,
welcome me into your region. Yes.
All right, but before we get into your show and whatever it is you might want to talk about, I don't know how much of the previous conversation you just heard, but we were talking about Leonard Lopate, and we were talking about
longtime talk show host here in New York. Yes.
Yep. Who will be joining us
on public radio? Who will be joining you? I'm intrigued to see, and I imagine there's been some controversy about that, huh?
Minor
so far, but I expect a little
minor,
more. But he's put this project together, and he approached us, and you know what? No matter what happens or whatever, you know, WNYC has been very, 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 very nonspecific about this. Six former producers, six or seven, are working with him. And you know what? He's such a terrific broadcaster. We said, you know what? He deserves a second shot. He deserves, there's no doubt about it. And hopefully it'll grow into something bigger for him. That's all. And if it doesn't, it doesn't. And if more comes out, more comes out. But right now
we have the airwaves, yeah. And he has the talent.
Yeah.
But what I am most curious about, and this is the philosophical question that, once again, we have the philosophy session instead of the media beat, or as part of the media beat. Do you think people care if they get bad information?
Do people care if they get bad information? Well, it depends, I suppose, on how much they care about getting good information.
That's actually the thrust of the. That's what I am using because you know I stand. I would say at the beginning of the week I have much longer teeth than I do at the end of the week after I've ground them down into.
You know, just what have you been grinding them over this week?
You name it. because
you complain, but you do.
No, the reason I grind is because as a student of the concept of Rashomon, I always make sure that I see several. I take several different. I sample different sources
sure.
when I am not present. And P.S. No matter what, being present or being very closely associated with what's going on is key to actually knowing what's going on. And in fact, the further away you get from what's actually going on, the more noise, the more information, the more drama, because that's kind of how you know. Just as with Niagara Falls, as you get closer, you get the rapids. You know, first it's the river, the Niagara River, and it's just a regular river. Then there are the rapids, and then, ooh, kaboom. And as you get closer and closer to the falls, the water gets more and more roiled. And in information, as you get further and further away, the information gets more and more roiled.
Hmm. Well, it's I think the... One of the features of media and media consumption over the last two decades, maybe more now, is it's a philosophical point, and it's a philosophical point that we return to time and time again, is that the contentiousness of that media coverage gets more and more vituperative, I think, and not just varied. The Rashomon is an indication that we all have our own perspectives, right? And media consumption involves taking in very different perspectives if you're going to be open-minded about your consumption. If you're not going to be open-minded about your consumption and only want to hear things that you agree with, which of course is an attitude which is encouraged by the media industries now, the segmentizing, the balkanizing, the bubble creating that goes on now, that people are only the managers of major media systems believe anyway that people only want to hear what they agree with. And of course, you end up with, if there's a lot of things roiling around you, you will, like it or not, hear things you don't agree with. And if that upsets you, and if that makes you grind your teeth, I'm not saying that you fall into that category, but I know that an awful lot of people do find themselves furious because they're being given information that they don't agree with. They only want the kind of information that they already do agree with. And that's, I think, an instance of, a very, very clear and profound symptom of having a very closed mind. And that's the opposite, I think, of what the real business of purveying information through the media is all about. I would have thought, and in fact, I always have thought, that the purpose of communication is to give people a broad sense of what is going on in the world and what different views about what goes on they can possibly be open to. The more different views, the better. But of course, that goes down badly with people who want a diet of absolute predictability.
Since I just automatically, without thinking, unconsciously fall into that, I always think, oh my goodness, the more information, the better, because the better, the more adroitly you will be able to assess what's actually going on and figure things out and participate or take a view that's worth embracing.
Sure, it's axiomatic for the likes of you and me, I guess, that the more varied a set of inputs you have, the more likely you are to reach a reasoned solution, or at least a well-informed opinion, rather than just basing your judgment on what you're told by people that you know you already agree with. That does seem axiomatic.
But on the other hand, the
industry doesn't work that way. It's all about reinforcing people's prejudices and preconceptions.
And intolerance. And it's right there that it's that intersection right there that caused me to ask the question. Do you think people care, or do you think that they're just happy to? I don't mean to oversimplify.
I think it varies. I think some people do care and care desperately, and they care. And there are also people who care desperately in the opposite direction. They care very, very extremely, if I can use that phrase. They don't have their mind, their pure virginal mind, sullied with information that contradicts what they already have in their brain box. And then there are people who perhaps don't care at all and have not even thought about it and are presumably not encouraged to think about it either, but feel vaguely uncomfortable and want to reach for the off switch or the channel changing switch when they hear things that discomfort them because they don't fit with the worldview that they've got in their head. And then there are those people, and this is a matter of a great range of different kinds of response to media. There are those people who don't care because they don't care. I mean, that's an interesting category for me. I mean, the people who say, "Oh, I'm not interested," I'm not interested in civic life, public life. Quite often it comes out as, oh, I'm not interested in politics. That's an interesting position to take in your life. You know, if you're not going to be engaged with what makes society function in terms of, you know, how society decides how to handle difficult questions or any questions at all about how to organize life, you know, everything from what kind of policy you have for garbage collection every day, right through to how are we going to deal as a macro society, as a nation state, for instance, when it comes to our national interests being threatened by a foreign enemy or a set of international conditions that don't favor us. Everything along that scale, from the small to the very large, is a matter with a small p of politics. Politics, after all, is about the organization of a community, polis, the Greek word, which kind of gets thought of as city, but it really means community, and how we organize. And if you don't want information about that, if you don't want information that helps you make decisions about that, then I don't know quite why you're living in a community at all.
Right. And, you know, and maybe you want to engage. Here's the sort of...
you might want to be a hermit in the cave, but that's a different matter.
Right. But then get yourself a good cave. No, seriously. Then go to... I don't mean this in a bad way. I just mean, right, if that's how you want to be, then encave yourself. But please unplug while you encave yourself. Because your opinions, with all due deference to the fact that everyone has an opinion... is that, or everyone is entitled to their opinion, is not part of the bigger, it doesn't fit into the bigger scheme of things. But here's the complicated, you know, when we talk about intolerance and whatnot, one of the things that was making me grind my teeth, and we've got a bit to go, but one of the things that was absolutely making me grind my teeth was, NPR, National Public Radio, and it was talking about... the fact that Kim Jong-un had said that he perhaps wasn't interested in meeting. It wasn't even that. He had said something about South Korea and it had started. But the way that it was presented to a bunch of people who go there for information was, and I quote, "What's up with that?"
Oh!
First thing in the morning. Now I'm not.
They're surprised that
right
that a participant in negotiations on a vast national question for that nation, and certainly in contention with our nation, and at a point where the two leaders of the nations are about to speak. That one side is starting to get iffy about meeting, huh? And iffy about the conditions under which they will actually meet at all and discuss. Well, that's called posturing, isn't it? And all negotiations involve taking a posture. So that prompts a question along the lines of what's up with that? There should be no surprise, I don't think, should there?
None. And my issue or complaint around that is there are a number of people who believe that as they are consuming that, they are getting the best possible information and position around it, and I'm just
yeah. Well, going, even good quality journalistic outlets are sometimes fall away from their standards. But it's a little. I mean, if that's the way it was done, I mean, it was supposed to be
conversational, and
yes. Let's chat. Let's chat informally about these issues that we're trying to explain. Well, that's a difficulty at the heart of all journalism. We want to be accessible. we're often talking about really complicated and awkward to explain issues. And it tends to, you know, favor, the task we've set ourselves is to popularize, in one sense, it's certainly to democratize understanding. And sometimes that means we take on a tone of popular journalism. That's what it's called, popular journalism, which is, you know, chatty and informal and all to the good. But sometimes, if you take the tenor of your discourse away from the Olympian standards you might want to hold to, and become just a barroom, you know, back and forth, then you're not doing your job quite as well as you should, I think.
There's no doubt about that. And I guess, how do you, you know, this is one of these ageist comments for which I'm famous. You know, it's fine. You know that. It's fine. I know that. But what about the people who listen diligently and feel as though they are being engaged? By the way, that wasn't the only thing that happened this week that made me go, gosh, if anyone had just...
I can't imagine it was, no. I mean, but there is, I mean, it has to be said that there is a general trend, particularly in broadcast journalism, to get sloppier and sloppier in our efforts to explain things. It irritates me too. I mean, when discourse turns sloppy, you want to just get people back on track. And yes, let's get specific, and let's use the appropriate words, not the sloppy ones. But of course, you know, it's also a human medium, especially live broadcasting. We're doing it now. We're trying our best to be chatty. I don't want to lecture. I do want to talk. I do want to engage people in something like real conversation. And it's not, of course, every piece of broadcasting is highly unnatural. It's not actually the sort of chat that you would have in a bar. Of course, a lot of the times it gets perilously close to it. And in some formats, particularly on walking, screaming so-called panel discussions on cable news television programs, it's just hell for leather, and it may as well be in a barroom brawl.
Yeah, and it's just, you just...
I throw my hands up in despair about that.
Well, but it also, you have to sell
really
product.
I don't really grind my teeth. I reach for the...
the remote.
I do reach for the remote, yeah.
Right.
Absolutely.
But again, sometimes, you know, I dive for the remote. It's, you know, sometimes it's too far, and I'm trying not to get frustrated. And I'll go to something, and then I'll find something else completely different. And that's when it comes to me that, wow, the whole point of this actually is to sell stuff. So, you know, one has to remember that.
There's something about a train wreck that makes us want to watch, and that's a given, and that's what marketing operatives work upon. And since most of these media outlets are financed by advertising, then, you know, why should we be surprised that it will generate into the verbal equivalent of a train wreck every now and again? In fact, a lot of the time.
I was just going to question your every now and again. And then we've got four minutes, and I want to just mildly, it's not so much digress as to flag the need at some point to talk about the different rules and arrangements that different countries have with their press, from free-ish to not.
Yeah, it's absolutely not free. Yes.
Right, because, you know, it's so easy now that we all have access to different broadcast outlets from different places to not understand, and you and I have touched upon this before, for example, you can mention suspects' names here as long as you say alleged, but you can't in UK, correct?
Oh, right. Well, on the whole, that's true. Yes, while a court case is still pending, that's something that journalism. It's a rule that journalism observes in Britain that you don't name people until the case actually begins. The general formula would say a man of 30 has been arrested. And for a while, that's the general, public status of that individual. And it's only when court proceedings start that we can fully report all that we can report. And even then, we have to be careful not to prejudice the court case. Free speech is such a shibboleth here in the United States that, of course, that would be deemed outrageous censorship in this country. And indeed, I tend to think that Britain's laws are a little too tight compared with the United States. But yes, the starting point of any discussion about it is that nations do have different ways of regulating how much press coverage there should be of individuals when it comes to criminal cases. And there is a tension always between not wanting to prejudice a court proceedings and on the one hand and wanting totally free speech on the part of the media on the other.
Thank you very much, David Tereshchuk, as always. The Media Beat.
Thank you.